Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Flagship Podcast. I am Chip Brown of Horns247.com, joined as always by my esteemed colleague, the one and only Eric Henry. Eric, full disclosure, we are recording on March 11th, 8 days to the start of spring football. Very exciting. And we're headed into March mayhem in college basketball. And the Texas Longhorns look like they have done what they needed to do to get into the 68-team NCAA tournament field. That's what Jerry Palm told Horns 24/7 on Sunday. So win or lose in the Big 12 tournament, we'll get into that. It looks like Texas is in to the big dance. Texas women are in the Big 12 tournament. They're, in fact, about to play Kansas State in the semifinals of the Big 12 tournament today. Texas baseball snaps a four-game losing streak by winning a season series at Texas Tech. That's a good way to start off Big 12 play, beating your rival Red Raiders out in Lubbock in the last regular season meeting as Big 12 mates. Texas softball, number one in the D1 softball poll, takes down Houston, but they lose game one of that series, win games two and three, and some uncharacteristic errors led to a very crooked fourth inning in game one against Houston. They give up 8 runs in the bottom of the fourth inning. Texas loses that game, but they come back and win games two and three. And Texas tennis, 12th ranked Texas tennis team. Eric, this is a team I think can win the national championship, but they've had some injuries. They lost some earlier matches to then number one Virginia, then number 14 Arizona, and then number two TCU. But they had their full lineup on Sunday, and they took down number one Ohio State. Really pretty methodically beat them 4-0. And if they can build from here and stay healthy and continue to field their full lineup, I think Texas can be in the mix for a national championship in tennis. But Eric, we lead things off with a little spring football as we count it down. And, those who are new to the Flagship Podcast, welcome, welcome. You're always welcome here. Longhorn fans, or even, the Aggies love to listen to the Flagship Podcast because they always want to know what's going on with Texas. Plus, they love me. We have a great relationship, me and Aggie Nation. Welcome in. And we've been kind of counting down, looking at different positions heading into spring football. Eric, my man Eric, has been doing excellent work doing some position inventories, and your most recent position inventory, Eric, is on the edge, the defensive end positions, the pass rushers. So let's get into that. How you doing, my man?
Oh, man. Listen, how do I follow that up? Thank you, Chip Brown. I'm coming to you live, not from my usual location in downtown Austin, Texas. But as you said, it is March Madness, March Mayhem, right? And for those of us, cover multiple sports like you and I do, it's a busy time because the Longhorns are heading to the Big 12 tournament. Of course, spring football is on the horizon. So this lovely background is not a studio apartment, but it is, in fact, the lovely Residence Inn here in downtown Kansas City, Missouri, the media hotel here for the Big 12 tournament. As you mentioned, the Texas women getting ready to kick off in about 45 minutes or so. So we will be tuned into that quite shortly. And the men scheduled to play on Wednesday. We'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, I'm here in KC, and you talked about the latest position inventory. This position that, in my mind, Chip, it's a really interesting one to get into, because you take a look at last year's team, and of course the strength. And listen, I hate to be repetitive, but when you have guys like Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy, they not only spearhead the defense, they spearhead the entire team, right? And we saw that as evidence when, you know, Steve Sarkisian sent those two out there to be the captains at Iowa State, when you have a loudmouth offensive lineman like Gerard Huffer who pops off at the mouth and he says, you got to face those guys, right? So I want to say all that to say that you'll probably hear me say throughout the preview that this is in an effort to replace those guys. And of course, you can't replace them. But what I think is really interesting, Chip, with the edges is, for right now, entering spring, it's not to say, and if you listen to the 2 weeks ago on the Flagship podcast, you heard us talk about the defensive tackles. It's not that the DT room can't be a strength of this team. In fact, I think both of us expect it to be a strength come season, then the season rolls around, right? But as we go into spring, there's no doubt in my mind, Chip, that the strength of that defensive line kicks outwards. It goes to the edges. It goes to the defensive end, starting with Baron Sorrell and Ethan Burke. Baron's a guy who, even if you take a look at his counting stats last year, yes, they had a bit of a dip compared to his 2022 numbers, which, of course, you know, they played one extra game in 2023 compared to 2022. Still a more than formidable defensive end, someone who you'd think, I mean, really could have toyed with the idea of going to the NFL. I think both of us agreed that the right decision for him really was to come back to school, give an opportunity to raise his draft stock, put another solid year of film on, or the solid year of play on film for the NFL scouts. And then you go to the other side, Ethan Burke, and you're talking about a guy who, Chip, just scratching the surface, right? You know, someone who was a lacrosse guy, highly recruited lacrosse guy out there, Austin Westlake, before he made the decision to focus full-time on football, get acclimated to the physicality of the game, Chip. And he had a really, in my mind, you know, an excellent first year as a starter. Still, you'd probably like to see those sack numbers of both guys rise a little bit. But again, you know, I think that was a byproduct, and I can't emphasize this enough, Chip. I think the quote-unquote low sack numbers for the ends was really a byproduct of, A, what you have in the middle in Sweat and Murphy and kind of everything running through them. And then you're kind of generating opportunities for guys like Anthony Hill and others, right? So, you know, they played their spots really well. You know that they are strong against the run. Absolutely. And not just guys who are making plays, because this is my metric, Chip, for especially those guys at the first and second line of defense. And I mean, of course, you can go to the safety and say the same thing. There's a difference between making plays, you know, when they come right at you and when you're making plays behind the line of scrimmage, right, or at the line of scrimmage. I think both Baron Sorrell and Ethan Burke fit that bill. So you take a look behind them, and you got a crop of guys, whether it's Justice Finkley, you know, who was that third guy in terms of snaps. We'll see what happens there. You know, in terms of the rest of the ends, it was kind of filled in kind of a slew of guys. You had Chris Ross when he was part of the program getting some snaps. He no longer is there. Jet Bush, of course, the good old Jet Bush, the pass rush specialist, no longer with the program. He is out of eligibility, right? So it's going to be interesting in my mind, Chip, to see who are those guys that fill, you know, those fourth, fifth, and sixth spots in terms of the edge, right? And, you know, I don't want to take away too much of shine, give you a chance to respond a little bit, but I think the obvious name you have to take a look at who could probably fill some of those edge snaps, and maybe if they bring him along slowly, like we saw Anthony Hill last year, is Colin Simmons, Chip. So I'll let you get a good chance to opine there. I talked for a good 3 minutes on the edges, so I'll let you jump in.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be really interesting, because you've got Ethan Burke and Baron Sorrell, as you mentioned, who I thought were excellent against the run. First and foremost, the Texas run defense, number three in the nation, giving up 82.4 yards per game on the ground. Ethan Burke is the highest rated run defender returning for Texas in 2024, according to Pro Football Focus. The guy knows how to set an edge. You weren't getting outside on on Ethan Burke. Same with Baron Sorrell. I thought those guys both did excellent in stopping the run. And let's be honest, that's the first priority. Now, I know it drives people crazy because Texas was among the leaders in the nation in quarterback pressures. You had, you know, Byron Murphy at the top of that list. Baron Sorrell was second. Tavondre Sweat third. Ethan Burke fourth. And yet they didn't have a double digit sack guy, and everyone looks for the double digit sack guy. Well, they bring in a double digit sack guy in Trey Moore, the transfer from UTSA, who had 14 and a half sacks last year. Now the critics will say, yeah, he piled him up against some of the weakest competition.
I saw him get 2.5 sacks, his first 2-sack game in his career against FIU. So just want to emphasize the point there, Chip.
Right. FIU, East Carolina, UAB, I think he had like 4.5 sacks in his career there against UAB. But bottom line is, Steve Sarkisian and this coaching staff felt like there was enough juice. And that's the word I keep hearing from talking to team sources about winter workouts about Trey Moore. Juice. This guy's got juice. So, look, maybe he raises his level once he, you know, now that he's at Texas. I don't know. But the bottom line is they feel like he's got that bend. He's got that ability to rush the passer. It is interesting because you mentioned Justice Finkley and Jamon Tapp, and you've got guys, you know, Jare Bledsoe, who will probably be playing inside, but has freaky athletic ability and is long and could play, you know, the defensive end position as well, the five technique. But Colin Simmons is the guy everyone is talking about because he's got crazy athletic ability. He does have unbelievable bend. He can dip his shoulder without losing speed or strength, get around, get underneath and around offensive tackles. We saw it in high school. How quickly can he bring that to the Power Five level, the SEC level? Because they're going to have to get creative, Eric, because I don't think they can sacrifice the run defense that Burke and Sorrell give them. They're going to have to be smart. You know, do you move Ethan Burke and Sorrell inside and have kind of a rabbits package with Simmons and Moore at the end position on obvious passing downs? Because Alfred Collins is a pretty good pass rusher too. So look, these are first world problems. You know, we talk about the receiver room at Texas suddenly overflowing, going from, oh my God, how do you replace Worthy, Mitchell, and Jordan Whittington to, oh my gosh, you have Isaiah Bond, Matthew Golden, Silas Bolden, Ryan Wingo, Ryan Niblett, who didn't get a sniff last year and is a 10,500 guy. In addition to Jonte Cook, these are first world problems. That's why this spring is so interesting to me, Eric, because this is the beginning of the funnel. All the guys are going into the funnel, and then we're going to see who comes out of the funnel. Who are the one or two guys in a rotation, or who are the three or four guys in the position group who are going to earn the most snaps on a team that has lofty expectations. Steve Sarkisian said he's borderline obsessed with winning a national championship. Texas is going to be a top 4 or 5 team in the preseason. They're going to be seen as one of 4 teams who could win the SEC. And you've got a lot of questions. You've got to fill, you got to answer in the spring, but it starts in the spring. And the fact that they have 17 early enrollees And Colin Simmons is one of them. And you've got Trey Moore on campus. And I think this is going to be really exciting. Plus, you also have new defensive line coach Kenny Baker mixing with Pete Kwiatkowski, who coaches the defensive ends, outside linebackers. And how do they see eye to eye, collaborate, who, you know, which guys appeal to them the most, all of that stuff that just comes with familiarity. I mean, it's funny. I was talking to Casey Hampton, the legendary Longhorns defensive tackle, the other day, and Casey, you know, said, look, Bo Davis was a really good coach. And the players trusted him. And now they're going to get to know a new coach and build that trust with him. That starts on March 19th. So a lot of exciting stuff. Some years you go into spring football and everything's figured out. Some years you go in and there are some big questions that need to be answered. And I feel like because of the expectations coming off the conference championship season, the first college football playoff berth, there's heightened awareness about everything going on with this football team right now. And I think Ethan Burke and Baron Sorrell are two of the guys you look at and say, man, I'm glad they're in the lineup if you're a Texas fan. And for those who just look at the sack numbers and say, man, Ethan Burke only had 5.5 sacks. Baron Sorrell only had 5 sacks. Listen, those guys did their job. Baron Sorrell had one of the biggest pass rushes of the season against K-State. Ethan Burke had a strip sack at the 5-yard line against K-State, a game Texas won in overtime. Burke's strip sack led to a touchdown on the next play by Jonathan Brooks. Those dudes made plays. And they answered the call when they had to, and they should be even more confident, more experienced, going into this spring.
Absolutely. Apologies for those watching, and to you, Chip, for looking distracted. The folks here in Missouri, you know, Chip, I'm sure the housekeeping in Texas, they know spring football's around. They know we're taping the flagship. I mean, Eli Drinkwitz has got a good thing going on in Missouri, right? They should know. This time of year, you can't just have housekeeping. We got to try to talk college football here. So I apologize for the bad housekeeping.
That's right. We got no time for housekeeping. Eric will do his own housekeeping while he's in Kansas City. He's at the residence.
Crying out. Exactly. Come on. Taping the flagship. What are we doing here? Apologies there. But no, quickly, I just want to just add one quick thing or two quick things really quick, Chip. On Trey Moore, again, really interested as someone, I guess I should probably provide, you know, my Conference USA background, having, as I said, you know, I covered him for 2 years when he's at UTSA, really his breakout game. He had it against FIU. So Trey Moore has a pretty sweet spin move, Chip. It was his go-to move at UTSA. Not a guy who, at least that I saw, you know, I can reach out to some of the folks there. And I'm actually hoping, Chip, to reach out to some Conference USA and American Athletic offensive line coaches. You know, Ed Warner, who's down on Tom Herman's staff at FAU, a couple teams that faced, you know, Trey Moore, and quite frankly, he had success against him, hoping to see what those O-line coaches say, because you don't get much of a bull rush from him, at least you didn't in 2022. Heavy spin move guy. Now, my question is, because that's something that you can just use at the SEC, right? Because it's pretty easy, no disrespect to the Conference USA offensive tackles, but as someone who covered Group of Five football for half a decade, you know, you may have a handful of guys at that level who end up being, you know, standout guys and go on to play professional football. Outside of that, the offensive line play, Chip, and you know this, having covered college football forever, if you talk with any coach who has coached at both levels, they will tell you the skill position guys are right. You know, you can kind of see some guys who maybe could play Power Five football, or, you know, there's some translation. It's in the trenches where you see the biggest difference, right? So the guys who are going to be facing the SEC, going to be much different. So we'll see how that plays out. And just, I just want to add one other thing, Chip, on as far as the pass rush numbers before we transition. You know, we've got a lot to cover here. I, for me, it's the sum total of sacks that I'm really keeping an eye on for Texas, and not necessarily one or two guys standing out. I look at last year, and you see some of the pressure that interior pressure that Murphy and Sweat provided, teams were game planning at a certain time to get the ball out of the quarterback's hands quickly. So that is going to account for low sack or lower. That wasn't low, but lower sack numbers. And B, and you think you did an excellent job talking about it, you know, scheming up guys by you know, committee, right? When Alfred Collins kicks out and certainly capable of being a D-end, right? That takes Sorrell or Sweat off of the field. And in essence, that takes away a sack opportunity. So I'm looking at that total number of sacks and to see where that goes in 2024.
Yeah. Yeah. Anthony Hill, we know to simplify things for him, initially, they had him in pass rush situations where he could just cut it loose and get after people. We saw it against Alabama. You know, he had two sacks, probably came this close to getting a personal foul for celebrating one of those sacks a little too much. But I mean, that talent showed up immediately. And then they worked him into the defense as a weak side linebacker, and he got better and better as the season went on. He gave up a 62-yard touchdown run against Wyoming. He didn't do that again the rest of the year. So he's the kind of guy who learns. You only have to tell him once, and that's a whole nother facet of what we'll get into here as we continue our countdown. Is, you know, and we talked about it a little bit last week, the linebacker position. What, you know, is it going to be Anthony Hill at middle? Is it going to be Kendrick Blackshire, the Alabama transfer, who was the backup middle linebacker and highly rated by Pro Football Focus, who came in the new 2024 spring roster came out and he's listed at 261 pounds. I'm like, that sounds a little bit like the old Ravens, you know, Terrell Suggs, 3-4 linebacker, outside linebacker. But, hey, if the dude can play and he's motivated and he can play fast, then let's see it. You've also got Leonga LaFau, but, Darian Gallette is another guy who got rave reviews for his progress last year on scout team and, you know, in winter workouts. He's got get off and he's got ability and he's listed at linebacker. But he's a guy like Billy Walton who can, you know, give you some burst coming off the edge, some pass rush type of, you know, situational pass rush. And I'm fascinated to see how the rotation goes. We know Burke and Sorrell, who are both obviously Sorrell draft eligible after the 2024 season. Burke also draft eligible after the 2024 season. And, you know, the NFL loves that kind of length. And Burke played hurt for four games with a knee injury that he had midseason surgery for and came back. I think his first game back was BYU or K might've been Case. I don't know, but he came back from that injury and played, you know, lights out. I mean, he had big plays in big games. It wasn't like he was loading up against, Wyoming and Rice. So yeah, I think the talent is there. It's going to be fun to watch how they put the pieces together. And so I think that's a loaded position. Another loaded position I kind of mentioned a second ago at receiver, Eric. And, you know, we talk about Steve Sarkisian and his receiver rotation. Last year, it was three guys. It was Worthy, Mitchell, and Jordan Whittington. The year before that, it was two guys. If you go back and look at the numbers, it was Worthy and Whittington and JT Sanders. And a lot of catches, a lot of passes went to running backs, Bijan Robinson, Keelan Robinson, and Roshan Johnson. And Casey Kane was the third leading receiver in 2022 with eight catches. Jonte Cook was the fourth leading receiver last year with eight catches. How big is this rotation going to be at receiver this year? We have to see. I mean, obviously, you've got Isaiah Bond, who's very much like Xavier Worthy. You've got Matthew Golden, who's more the bigger body receiver like A.D. Mitchell. And then you've got Jonte Cook and Silas Bolden, Ryan Niblett, who can play in the slot. But how many of these guys is Sarkisian going to play? Because if you go back to his Alabama days in 2019, he did have a full-fledged four-receiver rotation. And it was guys, you know, Devontae Smith, Jerry Jeudy, Jalen Waddle, Henry Ruggs. Pretty talented. He did not have a go-to tight end that year. I think his leading tight end was Forrestall, who I think he had less than 20 catches. So, but he had Najee Harris in 2019 and 2020. And I think Najee Harris had over 40 receptions in 2020. So Sark does a good job of getting the ball into the hands of the guys he thinks can be explosive, make big plays, drive defenses crazy. I'm really excited to see who he thinks fits that mold. Obviously, Silas Bolden doesn't get here till June, but he is a senior. He'll be done after this year. I think Matthew Golden and Isaiah Bond are already thinking about being one and done players. So Sarkisian's got a lot of guys now, 10 guys in that receiver room. Eric, what do you think?
Well, Chip, we've talked about this a lot, right? And I've written about it and talked about it. And this is the feeling I get, you know, so I'm not going to I'm not going to big brain this thing. I think Steve Sarkisian, wherever he believes he has the most talented players, he's going to play them. That's my firm belief. Now, if we get into the weeds a little bit, you take a look at his history. The year you mentioned Alabama 2019, granted, he was only there for a few seasons, but that's, in my mind, the outlier, right? I didn't know I was taping this podcast with Steve Sarkisian. Right, Chip. This is what I'm kind of really honing in on. And I don't like to psychoanalyze Sark, but I think you just take a look at the history. I think if let's use last year as a test case, if he has two tight ends that he feels confident in, that are there is the receiver spot doesn't have a distinct edge on that tight end, my feeling is he's going to go with the second tight end to use that to run his offense with, right? Now, can you make the argument that Gunnar Helm was distinctly better than who would have been the fourth option, Jonte Cook, last year? That to me is you can flip a coin. If you want to make the case distinctly that Gunnar Helm was, you would say that Jonte was a freshman, right? We know how Steve Sarkisian feels about freshmen. You fast forward to this year, and it's why I've written about it extensively. It's not a one-on-one battle, but I think it's a player versus player who is taking the most progression in their career between Jonte Cook and Gunnar Helm. Because you know Amari Nyeblack is going to be on the field. And, well, I guess, let me say this. I guess you shouldn't just specify the Jonte because Silas Bolden has to get here, right, in the summer. And Jonte could make a huge leap in the spring and put Silas Bolden in that position, right? So I guess I'll say Silas Bolden and or Jonte Cook versus their ability to show, in Jonte's case, the development versus the 15 spring practices, and in Silas's case, when he gets here in the summer, how quickly can he hit the ground running? Those two versus the development of Gunnar Helm. That, to me, is going to decide what you kind of get offensively. And again, Steve Sarkisian is one of the most talented play callers in college football. It's not to say that he can't scheme up from game to game, you know, X, Y, or Z. However, you know, again, not to get too in the weeds, but and teams certainly game plan week to week based on what they think is going to have for success. But it's not like, for example, Chip, this isn't Madden football, right? Where one week you're running 10 personnel and you toss out the playbook, right? And then you're going like, you know, wishbone, right? There's to be a certain measure of continuity with what you're doing, and we'll see how that plays out. But in my mind, Chip, you know, and this isn't having talked to anybody. I'm just looking at the history of Steve Sarkisian as a play caller. I think he's shown that if he has two tight ends that he feels are adequate enough to execute what he's looking to, you know, execute on Saturdays, that's where he leans to. But as you pointed out with the 2019 team, and no disrespect to the tight ends there at Bama in that group, I don't think it was close. You compare it to the receiver talent there, right? And I think that's really where things kind of shake out in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, think, you know, Amari Nyblak looks like a receiver. Like, I know, I think he's listed at 233. He doesn't look as thick as Jatavion Sanders, which if it doesn't matter if he can block. I mean, Amon-Ra St. Brown is 200 pounds, but he can block a defensive end. So can the receivers from the Green Bay Packers. I mean, it's about, are they a good blocker? And, you know, I think Gunnar Helm is going to be the guy that is locked in because he gives you that block that you need in the counter game, the running game. And he's proven to be a solid, complete tight end.
Real quick, I don't want to cut you off. I just want to throw this out at you. If you see Gunnar Helm locked in, do you then see Amari Nyblak deployed more as a receiver in the slot?
Well, I see Amari Nyblak in the same role as Jatavion Sanders last year. My question is, are we going to see a rotation of Jonte Cook and Silas Golden?
Sure.
Are we going to see a rotation of Ryan Wingo and Matthew Golden? Because
I got you.
If, like, in the Tom Herman era, he would roll four receivers in and then roll four receivers out. Sometimes you even wondered what receiver grouping was doing on the field on third down. Like, you're like, where's Devin Duvernay? Where's the playmakers, you know? And it was odd. With Sarkisian, it's different. I mean, Sarkisian he wants the guys he trusts the most on the field and not much else. So we didn't even see Isaiah Neyor or Casey Kane last year. And Isaiah Neyor had 12 touchdown catches at Wyoming in one season. That was the most Xavier Worthy ever had in a season at Texas. So it's fascinating to me. They rotated five guys at safety last year. They rotated three guys at receiver. So I'm fascinated to see with a room 10 deep and, you know, guys that I know they like. I know they like Ryan Niblett. I know they like DeAndre Moore, because everyone's speculating that Texas is going to lose guys to the portal after spring at receiver. Maybe even, you know, at the defensive end position that we were talking about earlier, if they can't find a way to get everyone included and bought in and feeling invested. But I think these are first world problems, and Steve Sarkisian he's the honey, and the skill talent in college football are the bees. I mean, they want to be with Steve Sarkisian because they know the guy knows how to coach them. He knows how to get them ready for the NFL, and the NFL loves Steve Sarkisian players. So it's a good situation for the Texas Longhorns right now. All right, Eric, we've got, obviously you're in Kansas City. We got Big 12 basketball tournament to talk here, but Texas finishes up at home with a win on senior day over Oklahoma. Tyrese Hunter goes for 30. It was like angels singing for Rodney Terry, I'm sure, because we know Tyrese Hunter has that in him. We've seen it. I think we saw it last year in the Sweet 16 against Xavier when they needed scoring punch because the game plan focused so much on Marcus Carr. Tyrese Hunter stepped up with some big threes in the early part of the second half to keep Xavier from ever really threatening in the second half of that game. That was a talented Xavier team that had a lot of weapons inside and out. Dylan DeZoo wins, you know, first team All Big 12 honors and most improved player in the league, both well deserved. Max A. Smith, second team, All Big 12. Understandable in a league with Jamal Shedd and some of the, you know, Taman Lipsey and some of the do-it-all talents in this league. I was a little disappointed that Kendall Weaver didn't get even honorable mention, for God's sake. I mean, that's my guy. Like, honorable mention, defense, something. But interesting in the OU game, Brock Cunningham Sr. starts. He starts with a broken thumb on his shooting hand and plays well. 6 points, 6 assists, 5 rebounds. Dylan Mitchell comes off the bench. He plays well. And if this is how Texas basketball is going to look when they take on Kansas State in the second round of the Big 12 tournament, now that we have 14 teams, then let's go, Eric.
Chip Brown, I'm here to tell you right now, if Tyrese Hunter can kick things into gear at the right time, I brought 2 suits here, and I might need 2 more to take me through the rest of the tournament, and that'll probably bleed over into my NCAA tournament travel as well. Chip, I mean, we've seen it all year long. Been looking for a consistent third scorer. At times, it's looked like it could be Dylan Mitchell, right? He's been averaging just under 10 points per game. But at times, you know, it's looked like, all right, he's on that trajectory, and then it's not consistent. Too often this year, Chip, and I talked about it, entering the Baylor game, there were 6 games this year that Tyrese Hunter in conference play had scored 6 points or less. Too often this year, Tyrese Hunter has been invisible. We've heard Rodney Terry talk about not letting his defense affect his offense. And Tyrese Hunter said it post-game that, you know, hey, everything for me starts with defense. And you can appreciate that mentality from a guy racing Wisconsin. You know, Tyrese Hunter's a scrappy guy. I mean, despite the fact he's listed 6 foot, he is a scrappy type of player. You can tell that he wants to be that defensive identity guy. I think sometimes it's just too, I don't want to get too tough of an ask, but he is what he is size-wise, and you know, teams are going to be able to exploit him and things of that nature. But if he can, even if it's Chip 15 points a game, which is not out of the realm because he's an 11, 12-point-per-game scorer this year, and that's with the aforementioned struggles that I mentioned, if he gives a consistent 15, 16 a night, you know Matt's ace must come March. Just go look at the, or go YouTube Matt's ace must Oral Roberts highlights. You know what he is come March. Dylan Dessou is someone who we've seen is capable of putting 20, 25 together every night. So, yes, to bring it back to where you started, I do think this was like Angels calling, you know, and finally Texas got that third scoring option. So we'll see what happens comes Wednesday. They're facing Jerome Tang's Kansas State Wildcats. To me, that's a very favorable matchup. If they get out of that game, they'll then face, you know, Tim and Lipsy in Iowa State. And listen, I'll say this. Has Iowa State looked like a better team than Texas this year consistently? You can't question that, right? That to me is a yes. But on a neutral floor, funny things can happen. And if Texas playing the type of basketball that we've seen them play against Oklahoma, against Texas Tech, I would take the Longhorns over Iowa State, or at least put it at a 50-50 on a neutral court. So we'll see what happens. I'm going to save my Brock Cunningham, Dylan Mitchell opinions. I know we got that in take it or leave it, but all in all, I'm pretty optimistic now heading into, you know, we're here Monday. So Tuesday, we'll get a chance to talk to, ideally get a chance to talk to Rodney Terry and get things kicked off Wednesday. We'll see what happens.
Eric, they shot 73% in the second half against OU. 73%. I mean,
Chip, they supposedly shot Porter Moser to DePaul, which I don't know if you saw that. Am I springing that on you live?
Wait, what? I couldn't. You broke up for a second.
Oh, I just was making a joke. I was saying the 73% was so good, they literally shot Porter Moser to take the DePaul job. I don't know if I'm springing that one on you live, but that just making a joke there, Chip. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, and that, unfortunately, that's what Baylor did to Texas on Monday night last week. They shot 73% in the second half. But look, this is a Texas team that they hit 12 of 12 free throws. And so that second half was amazing against Oklahoma. If they can continue to build from there, watch out. Because right now, most bracketology has them as an eight or nine seed, depending on which bracket you look at, which means you're getting a number one seed in the second round, in the round of 32. I've seen them in Tennessee's region. I've seen them in Purdue's region. Purdue would be a terrible matchup for Texas unless Caden Shedrick is ready to have the game of his life. So it'll be fun. It'll be fun. We'll have a lot to kick around when we hit the podcast next week. We'll know what's going on with the NCAA tournament, and we'll be able to talk about that. We've, you know, talked about the Texas women, and we've mentioned Texas baseball, which, you know, got its, they're off to a 2-1 start in Big 12 play after the win at Texas Tech. The only concern for Texas baseball coming out of that is the starting pitching was not good. You know, LeBaron Johnson gave you a little over four innings, but he gave up five runs, four of them earned. You know, Cody Howard gave you three innings before he got pulled, and then Charlie Hurley and Tanner Witt combined for three innings and gave up six runs. And, you know, you're thankful that you got some relief pitching that maybe you weren't quite sure you were going to get. You know, like I said, Easton Tumis settled in, gave you one in two-thirds innings of scoreless relief. And then Gage Baim, he goes four innings, gave up one run on two hits with three strikeouts, got his second save, starting to look like the closer. The way the starting pitching is going for Texas right now, you're going to need middle relief. You're going to need extended relief, and that's unfortunate. David Pierce fired Woody Williams to take over the pitching himself. Pierce is a bulldog. I think he'll get it figured out. I think he'll get these guys right. But, you know, you're happy with the win, the 2-1 series win at Texas Tech, but the starting pitching's got to settle down, and we'll watch that as Texas baseball season progresses. All right, Eric, you ready for some love it or leave it, or some take it or leave it? Why do I do that? Take it or leave it.
It was, you were doing love it or leave it for a long time with the great Taylor Essence. So, you know, I don't blame you, but I am always ready for my favorite part of the show. So take it or leave it.
Let's do it.
I have a secret. I use Secret Whole Body Deodorant because more than just my armpits stink.
Can I use it where my bra rubs under my...
yeah.
And what about down there? You know, my...
Totally. 4 out of 5 gynecologists would recommend it. So I tried it, and now I get 72 hours of freshness from my pits to my...
Ooh, I love that it's a spray.
Me too. And it comes in sticks and creams too. Go get your Secret Whole Body Deodorant.
All right, kids, if you're watching us on the Horns 24/7 YouTube channel, we will roll on with some take it or leave it. I will go first. Eric, we're talking about the edge position. So in our way too early prognostications for the 2024 season, Ethan Burke will lead Texas in sacks in 2024. Take it or leave it.
I am leaving it, and I don't want to make it too cut and dry, but I think there's a gentleman by the name of Anthony Hill Jr. that Chip is going to wreck the SEC. And I know I said in the earlier part of the podcast that I don't necessarily think it's crucial for Texas to have a double-digit sack guy, right, because of all the things we mentioned. However, if there's one person who I think could just step on a field and get two sacks without even really – trying, it is Anthony Hill Jr. So I say he will lead the team in sacks, and I'll even go as far as to say he's going to be a 12-plus sack guy this year.
Chip. Woo! Wow. That is a hot take, kids.
Coming out strong, baby.
That is a hot take. I'm going to put that one on a post-it note because that's a hot take. My man E. Henry says A. Hill with 12 sacks in 2024. Gosh, I'm boring compared to you. I'm going to take this. I feel like Ethan Burke is just getting it figured out. Love how physical this guy is. Love that he played four games with a knee injury, had midseason surgery, was back 14 days later, getting sacks and strip sacks against K-State. And I think his length is a problem for offensive tackles, and in his strength, he's strong enough to use that leverage. And I think he's just getting started in football, like you said, after being a heavily recruited. Hell, he was recruited by Maryland, the lacrosse factory, was committed to Maryland for a scholarship until the Maryland lacrosse coach told Ethan, "Hey man, we don't have full rides for scholarships in lacrosse. If you can get a full ride for football, don't sign your letter of intent to Maryland for lacrosse," which the Burke family was forever grateful. And sure enough, here we are. So I'm going to take this, Eric, but who knows? All right. No. Take it or leave it. Number two.
As we tease in the early part of the podcast, take it or leave it. Number two. Brock Cunningham should take Dylan Mitchell's spot in the starting five. Chip Brown, take it or leave it.
Okay, so we're talking about this because Brock started on senior day. He played really well. I mean, for Brock, you know, 6 points, six assists, five rebounds, a couple of steals. That's perfect. But Dylan Mitchell seemed to play with more fire. Dylan Mitchell has started every game of his Texas career until Saturday. And there are days where he takes a while to get going. There are times where he gets going right away. Against Oklahoma, he came in with urgency. He was making plays right away. And I'm like, is that the secret? Is that what it takes to get the best of Dylan Mitchell? Because you and I have been talking all year. It seems like there's more that he can do. There's more, you know. We were talking about how he got lit up by Bridges in the Baylor game. That was his guy, and he's given up 6 of 6 three-point shooting. And he was plugged in, dialed in. I'm going to leave this, but, I mean, come on. I don't know who's in charge of getting Dylan Mitchell's motor cranked up, but If he's better coming off the bench, I mean, look, Manu Ginobili was better coming in off the bench. I mean, he's a starter. He played starter minutes. I'm not saying Dylan Mitchell should play substitution sixth man minutes. He needs to play starter minutes. But maybe he's better coming off the bench. You know what? Hell, I'm going to take it. I'm going to take this. Let's experiment a little bit further with this Dylan Mitchell coming in off the bench, because – good heavens, E. Henry, we've been wondering all year what it's going to take to get a little more out of Dylan Mitchell. Say you?
I am going to leave it. And, you know, as I've said before on the podcast, right, you know, I've seen Dylan Mitchell play since Sickles, Alonzo High School back in Tampa, and Bishop McLaughlin all the way.
Well, do you know what it takes to get this guy going?
You know what? He needs a little cafe con leche from back home in Tampa, all right? Get him a little bit of that going and get cranked up. No, here's the thing in my mind, Chip. I'm not even – what I'm about to say is not anti your take, because I do think it's – Dylan Mitchell can do anything he wants to on a basketball court. It's absolutely true that he can provide more, right? And even with some of his up and downs between this year, still the Big 12 second leading rebounder, 7.77 boards per game, right? You'd like to see that on a more consistent basis. But the reason why I leave it is because I think, quite frankly, at the early part of this year, we saw what Brock Cunningham gives you in the starting lineup. And this is no shade on Brock, because granted, he did not play in a starting lineup that included Dylan Dessou, right? Of course, he was getting the starts, in essence, for Dessou recovering from foot surgery. But I am of the camp, Chip, that I think Brock Cunningham is overexposed in the starting lineup, right? I need to take a look at his numbers all the way around this year. But for the most part, except for rebounds, he was right on par, but his shooting numbers are down. To me, it's a bit of an overusage thing in my mind with him coming out of the starting five. I mean, it's great that Brock gave you that classic. First off, what a way for Brock Cunningham to end his Texas career at home. Classic Brock Cunningham stat line, right? 6-6-5. I gotta love everything about that. All you needed was, you know, a little dust up there to crank up things. But in my mind, I am leaving it. Not necessarily that we don't see more from Dylan Mitchell, but I think we've seen essentially what you're going to get from Brock Cunningham on a consistent basis out of the starting line.
All right. I see how you take up for IT Horton when he needs to start instead of coming in off the bench. I wanted to see where you'd be with Brock. And I agree. Brock in place of Dylan Dessou, not good. But Brock maybe allowing Dylan Mitchell to take a look and see how things are looking. I don't know. I just liked the way Dylan Mitchell came right in, and I liked his energy right off the bench. But I doubt it's probably a moot point, because I'm sure Dylan will be back in the starting lineup against K-State on Wednesday. All right, let's wrap it up with Take It or Leave It, number 3. All right, here you go, Eric. Texas would be better off losing to K-State in their Big 12 tourney opener, so Dylan Dessou can rest his knee. Take it or leave it.
And I apologize. I'm the one who wrote first round. Obviously, Texas is not playing the first round. It's their Big 12 opener, so I apologize in the verbiage there. But no, I am leaving it, Chip. I want to see, while I think Dylan arrested Dylan Dessou with the type of basketball he was playing, can be the type of guy compared with a Max Asemus who can get you to the Sweet 16 when they get hot, right? With that being said, I don't want to see any stall in the momentum of this Texas basketball team. I just want to see them continue to play good basketball all the way through. Because Chip, we only saw it twice this year. This team went back-to-back games in Big 12 play. So I'd like to see them put a little something together and possibly win 3 games back to back. So beating K-State, of course, beating Iowa State. So I'm leaving it, Chip. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to leave it. You got to get out. You got to try and get off this 8-9 line. You know, you got to beat K-State and then you got to beat Iowa State. You beat Iowa State, you might be on the 7-10 line, which is way better than playing Purdue or Tennessee in the round of 32 of the NCAA tournament. So I agree with you. I'm going to leave that. Dylan Dessou, guy's a warrior. Let's hope that he's able to get the rest he needs between Saturday and Wednesday. All right, kids. Good stuff. Good stuff. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Flagship Podcast. For Eric Henry, who is in Kansas City, giving you blanket coverage of the men's and women's Big 12 basketball tournament for Horns247.com. I am Chip Brown. Until next time, we'll see you over at Horns247.com. Stay safe. Keep the faith.
Hello, everyone. It's Micah Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean, outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls.
Rated PG-13.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.